So John's last part of this is really the introduction of what Mary did Tuesday. It's present quality of your mind. I'm going to start with a little go back to the beginning. In the Buddha's words, and this is how he starts the Satipatthana Sutta. Friends, there are four frames of reference, four foundations of mindfulness that are required for the purification of all beings, for the overcoming of sorrow, regret, for the disappearance of pain and distress, for the establishing the right method of practice, and for the complete unbinding. For the establishment of the right method of practice. And just to bring it further to how Mary started this session, the present quality of mind. And how does one remain mindful of the present quality of mind in and of itself? One remains focused on the mind internally and externally, on the mind itself. One remains focused on the origination of the mind and the arising and passing away of with regard to the mind itself. One knows there is a mind. They remain independent of and not clinging to anything in this world. This session is, again, a short one. It's primarily focused on the seven factors of awakening. It finishes with the Four Noble Truths. I think in some works that may have been added after. But again, many different hands have had their whack at this sutta. But for our purposes, think of what you're trying to develop and what you're abandoning. And it's natural that we've always kind of like leaned into the hindrances. These are things we are working to let go, abandon. You have to understand them within the context of dependent origination and the Four Noble Truths, but these things are easily seen. There's sensory desire, there's ill will, there's sloth and torpor, there's restlessness, there's doubt. Those are things we can understand, but it really is the defilements, greed, aversion, deluded thinking. And then the natural thinking that the antidote of all this is these factors of awakening. If we could just keep those things in mind, that will offset ill will. But as the Buddha says, mindfulness is needed for the right establishment of right practice. So when you go through the awakening factors, these are things that you're developing now, your practice. Some things are necessary, like concentration and mindfulness, and some things are just developing calm, tranquility, joyful engagement. These are things that are just naturally starting to occur. In this sutta, they're saying, be aware of it. Be aware of it dispassionately. It's arising and passing away, as all things do. There's some ground work and rules to how this all happens. This environment, this laboratory that you're developing. You have to have seclusion, physical seclusion and mental seclusion. You have to establish that you're going to find a spot, a place, a root of a tree, an empty room, a van, a closet, a Brooklyn bathroom, wherever you can find it. You need to find a secluded place so you can calm your mind. And then that developing dispassion. You have to dispassionately be aware of these things arising. So then you can start seeing the cessation of it. it naturally would start lessening. It's not if or maybe, it will. It will just naturally start slowly, gradually stopping. And that's when renunciation can happen. That's when you can let it go. It just will not be part of your wheelhouse. You cannot be mindful if you have ill will. It does not work. You cannot have compassion for someone if you have ill will. Two things, your mind cannot have those two things going at the same time. You cannot have doubt and joyful engagement. You cannot have sense desires, which is so easy that we skip over. That's the root of it all. It's the second noble truth. Sensory desire. Then how can you have calm? So these are things to keep in mind. Again, dispassionate awareness as it arises. And again, you can run through this sutta, and the Buddha saying the same thing over and over again. Be aware that if it's not there, be aware if it is there. But what he's really saying is train your mind to be aware of it dispassionately. So the mindfulness of the seven factors of awakening. And this isn't a linear list. It's not, hey, I've got to do this to do that to do this. And but guess what? You have to have mindfulness. Can't get around that. And even though it's toward the end of the list, concentration, which is a focus thing, your breath and your body, that's the first foundation. You have to establish that foundation to have that mindfulness. Everything else is like it grows out of those two things: tranquility, joy, and a couple of other ones. But remain mindful that mindfulness, sati, is a factor of awakening within me. If mindfulness as a factor of awakening is not present, be mindful that mindfulness as a factor of awakening is not present within me. And be mindful of how mindfulness as a factor of awakening will arise through, in John words, through appropriate mindfulness. Remain mindful of the culmination of the development of mindfulness as a factor of awakening. Can't get around that one. Don't beat yourself up when you're sitting or walking around and you are feeling ill will. You are not being mindful because you're mindful of this entire Dhamma. You're being mindful. All these lists are simply tweezing out. And I think a lot of times, because there are meditation practices where it's a practice of what's it called? Contemplation. They will contemplate on each and every one by one. And they will, to me, that's just, and I used to ask John, I'm like, real early on, I was like, hey, John, isn't that just counting? Aren't they just working their way through so they can get through a sit? And they're, I'm gonna first foundation, concentrate on my feet, my toes, oh, my feeling in my calf, and so on. You can get through 2 hours if you really want to, but that's not building any concentration. I could do that sitting around. So these lists are simply culminates in the hindrances. So that's why it's easy to like grasp that aspect of it, that when there's ill will, it should be rolling you back to the second noble truth. Remaining mindful of the investigation of the Dhamma is a factor of awakening. The investigation of the Dhamma, you have to have mindfulness. You can't investigate if you have ill will. Or if you're anxious, you're in the wrong mindset. It's just, you can try to calm yourself and restore your concentration, but there's a time for investigation. And it's not to grind through it to try to figure out why you are experiencing ill will. This is not a time to contemplate or figure it out. It's just to dispassionately see it arise and pass away. And if an investigation of the Dhamma as a factor of awakening is not present, be mindful that investigation of Dhamma is not present, and be mindful how investigation of the Dhamma as a factor of awakening will arise. Remain mindful of the culmination of the development of investigation of the Dhamma as a factor of awakening. Remain mindful that perseverance, persistence, energy, or vigor is a factor of awakening. We've talked about this before. This practice is a practice of vigor, energy, of when there is sloth and torpor, when you are tired in the mind or the body, and conjure up that energy based on the Dhamma and knowing that I need to get my rest. I need to eat well. I need to be in a place where I'm not sitting in the evening too late. And I'm not trying to figure things out in my morning and grinding out my schedule. It's a practice of vigor. It's a practice of persistence. But in this setting, if persistence as a factor of awakening is not present, be mindful that persistence is not present, and be mindful of how persistence as a factor of awakening will arise. These are all impermanent. They will arise and pass away. Remain mindful of the culmination of the development of persistence as a factor of awakening. The fourth factor of awakening, remain mindful of joyful engagement with the Dhamma is a factor of awakening. Now, my personal experience is the three jewels. That's what I keep in mind. The Buddha, the Buddha's Dhamma, and this, our Sangha. That propels me, that energizes me, that arises in me, and I keep that in mind. That's what mindfulness is. What am I keeping mindful in the fore? And that's one of the things that naturally comes to me. That's what I, from the very first, I would sit and I'm like, where am I with right view? And why do I do this? This joyful engagement. That propels me. That gives me vigor. That gets me through doing this each and every day. But if it's not there, be mindful that it's not there. Be mindful that joyful engagement with the Dhamma is not present. And be mindful of how a joyful engagement with the Dhamma as a factor of awakening will arise. That doesn't happen by magic. It happens by your efforts, right efforts. Right effort means I'm going to be focused and mindful of the Four Noble Truths. That's what this is. That's the whole Dhamma. None of this happens just by chance. It will arise and pass away. That's the nature of all things. But your vigor, your right effort is all controlled by you. Remain mindful that serenity or tranquility is a factor of awakening. If serenity as a factor of awakening is not present, be mindful that serenity is not present, and be mindful of how serenity as a factor of awakening will arise. Remain mindful of the culmination of the development of serenity as a factor of awakening. It's one of these calming factors, right? I feel ill will. I'm aware of that, and I know it's going to pass. But I also know when I'm calm and there's a sense of serenity, I also know that it's passing. I'm sensitive to it passing. I don't try to grasp at it. I don't try to say, why can't I get this? I just know it's arising and passing away. Same thing with concentration. Remain mindful that concentration or samadhi is a factor of awakening. If concentration as a factor of awakening is not present, be mindful that concentration is not present, and be mindful of how concentration as a factor of awakening will arise. Remain mindful of the culmination of the development of concentration as a factor of awakening. Remain mindful that equanimity is a factor of awakening, another calming factor. It's really right view. I'm the middle way. It's a sense of balance. When we're out of balance, what are we're experiencing the hindrances. We're experiencing stress. We're experiencing a sense of not being well. If equanimity as a factor of awakening is not present, be mindful that equanimity is not present, and be mindful of equanimity as a factor of awakening will arise. Remain mindful of the culmination of the development of equanimity as a factor of awakening. In this way, one remains mindful of the seven factors of awakening and the arising and passing away of the seven factors of awakening, independent of and not clinging to anything in the world. This is how one remains mindful of the seven factors of awakening in and of themselves. So there's, what do you call these factors? To me, early on, I kind of put them in buckets. You know, mindfulness was like this, like overall thing, balancing factor. I needed to have that. And then there's these energizing factors, investigation, energy, joyful engagement, these positive things, these things that I know that are not permanent, but I can lean into those things. When I feel that arising, I know that when people are asking last couple of weeks about progress, I know that I'm not experiencing ill will as much, not through anything magical. It's because I'm understanding the Four Noble Truths. I can put that in the context of dependent origination and see how that mind at that point of contact, why do they have the seven or the, you know, this sixth sense base in here? Why? Well, that's where it all happens. That's the point of contact. That's where everything runs through. And guess what? The second foundation of mindfulness, feeling. Is it a positive feeling, a negative feeling, a feeling of boredom? That's where it's all happening. So you always have to put it in context of the dependent origination. And then there's the calming factors, tranquility, concentration, equanimity. Let's throw some John words in here. Remaining mindful of the seven factors of awakening, it's mindful acknowledgement of development of the Eightfold Path correctly. Mindfulness of the seven factors of awakening may occur during meditation, but should not necessarily be cultivated during meditation. Again, John always warned everyone that this is not a contemplation practice. And now that John's gone, I hear it more and more that people are doing that. When the Buddha died, guess what they were doing? I'm going to make this better. I'm going to make it more to my liking. Now, there's all ways to do things that are helpful and to make oneself feel good. I heard Mary sent me a Jerry Seinfeld thing, and he's into TM, and he threw some Marcus Aurelius in there. And I'm like, oh, he's piecing together this. He cobbled together something. But I'm like, but he has nothing to support it. He doesn't have a practice. It's the wrong resolution. Because I think Jerry Seinfeld said something like, just do the best you can, whatever you're doing. I'm like, oh, it's all about work. For him, it was like it's something that he was trying to put together in a specific thing. Versus what we're trying to do is understand the nature of suffering and our contribution. All that other stuff will become byproducts. Oftentimes I've heard people say, like, what about compassion? What about, you know, love and kindness? That's all byproducts. Mm-hmm. Buddha's not teaching you anything about that. It's not part of the four foundations. It's not part of the four noble truths. He's not going to say, and you'll be a more loving partner to your wife. Be a byproduct that naturally would become a natural inclination for you to, if you don't have ill will, which has to be abandoned, what else is there except to be kind? Not to be harmful to anyone. But you have to address the reality about your sense desires. I mean, that's what people tend to want to skip. You have to address it. Not that you don't have skillful desires. It has to do with family, work, and all the other things. But is it being driven by wrong view? Mindfulness of the Four Noble Truths. And isn't this really what we're supposed to be keeping in mind? This is what we're keeping in mind, these Four Noble Truths. Furthermore, one remains mindful of the quality of mind in reference to the Four Noble Truths. Remain mindful of knowing the cause of the nature of dukkha, stress, all forms of stress and confusion. The cause and nature of the origination of stress. The cause or nature of the sensation of stress. Knowledge and integration of the Eightfold Path leading to the cessation of stress. This is John's words. This last is a profound and penetrating understanding of the First Noble Truth developed through the Eightfold Path, resting in jhana. As a consequence of having a human life, there will be stress. And there is nothing personal about stress. In this way, one remains mindful, this is Buddha, remains mindful of the quality of mind in and out of itself, internally and externally. One remains mindful of the phenomenon of the origination of qualities of mind and their arising and passing away. There is knowledge of the maintenance of qualities of mind and their recollection, independent of and not clinging to anything in the world. This is how one remains mindful of the Four Noble Truths and of them in and of themselves. And then the final section is the effectiveness of the four foundations of mindfulness. And I would say, well, I think the Buddha says, now, if anyone develops these four foundations of mindfulness in the manner for 7 years, one can expect either complete understanding here and now, or if there's any clinging and maintaining remaining in the present life, let alone 7 years, if anyone perfectly develops, as he said in the beginning, these four foundations of mindfulness in this manner for 5, 6, 4, 3, 2, 1, 1 year, for 6 months or 3 months, 1 month, 2 weeks, or 7 days, one can expect either complete understanding here and now, or if there is any clinging and maintaining remaining in this present life. Friends, this is the direct path for purification of all beings, for the cessation of sorrow and regret, for the disappearance of pain and distress, for establishing the right method of practice, for the complete unbinding, in other words, these four foundations of mindfulness. This is what was said by the Buddha. Hearing these words, those assembled were gratified and delighted. The end of the sutta. Good stuff. I think this is always everyone's favorite. Let's go to my friend Tracy.
Thank you, David. That was great. Awesome teaching. Hi, everyone. I felt like the way you taught that, what I took away from the teaching today was being mindful of when you are experiencing a hindrance and when you're not experiencing a hindrance is all you need to do, because anything other than those two things, you aren't being mindful. You are caught up in some sort of clinging or craving or averting. So an example that came to mind for me that I've been noticing this week is I'm starting to sort of find moments of understanding this more. When I'm feeling anxious, instead of being mindful of the anxiety that's arising, I noticed in the past that I would try to disassociate, which is aversion. Instead of being mindful, the moment you're mindful of the feeling of anxiety or restlessness, you're already starting to let it go just by noticing it is there and coming into more sort of the other side, like you said, David, the balance between the two. And in the past, John has said that this practice is a limiting practice. And I'm starting to understand through this teaching that you gave today what that actually means. It's limiting between two sort of very focused, purposeful ways of seeing things versus getting caught up in the story or a narrative that is not part of the Buddhist Dhamma. And that was very clear in how you taught this today. So thank you.
And that's where the factor of investigation, as you described, took place. It happens for me off the cushion. I do not try to solve anything on the cushion. I will take that time in the context of dependent origination and the Four Noble Truths. I will, when ill will arises, I know it's passing, but I need to reconcile what I'm holding on to. What little part of in my selfish little head is saying that little bit of ill will is justified? You know, how what where is that not being understood by me in the Second Noble Truth? And it just means I just need to deepen my practice. It's not a like I got to get to this. I've established what my practice is. It's well established. My practice is very filled with rigor and understanding, but it just is always deepening. And that's my always been my approach. You know, when I first met John, I said, I can't rush concentration. I can't rush my level of mindfulness. And I'm not going to try. Because I was studying a lot. I was learning all the lists and all that. You know, I said, early on, I said, I can't rush that. I can't. And I'm in it for the long haul. And the time to investigate is when I understand dependent origination. And then I can see where I'm like, oh, let's explore that a little bit. But I don't ruminate over it. I just don't. If I'm gentle with anyone, I'm gentle with myself because I have to be.
There, it just that understanding arises pretty much by itself. You don't really need to chase after them.
No, because it's the Buddha saying it takes 7 years, it takes 7 seconds. It doesn't matter. It's the practice, it's the establishing of seclusion so you can experience it in an environment where it can be seen clearly. Thank you, Tracy.
Thank you so much, David.
Dr. Kevin, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, everyone. I'm being distracted by my cat now. So he wants to know about the Dhamma. Thank you so much, David, that, for framing this and putting the perspective you put on this, and it just makes it so clear. I think when I first learned about the seven factors, I thought this is something to strive for. I have to like work on this. I have to, you know, make sure I get them all in order or else nothing good will happen. And I just love the way you put it that, you know, it's really knowing about the Four Noble Truths and about mindfulness. And if we really concentrate, except on this cat, then it'll fall into place. And, you know, and once we have that calm that we develop in concentration, then these things will fall into place. And it's so easy to just lose it. As soon as you're off your cushion, as soon as I'm off my cushion, you know, just, the ego takes over and poof. But it's great to be able to come back twice a day. Well, for me, more recently, it's been once a day, but I have to get back to my second sit.
Kevin, I would challenge you and say that your practice is experiencing, even off the cushion in its most difficult like encounter, that you're experiencing the arising and passing away and you're dispassionately aware of it.
Try to be, yeah.
That's the practice.
Yeah.
And slowly it just, if you do investigate, mindfully investigate, then you'll see why that encounter went awry. There is work to be done. I mean, it's not like, oh, this is all happening.
Always, yeah. Even after 7 years. So hopefully in this lifetime, but we'll see.
And it doesn't matter, Kevin. It just doesn't matter because it's the present quality of your mind. This moment is the most important moment, which sets up the next moment. You can't worry about that moment 3 minutes ago where you were like, with no one even seeing it, being overcritical of yourself or something you saw out there. But this moment, are you mindful of this moment, this little nugget of a moment that builds into the next moment? And that's karma. How is that moment propelling to the next moment? And these factors of awakening are there to let you see when it's arising. I am concentrated, therefore I can be mindful. So thank you.
Thank you very much, David.
Becky, am I lined up?
Hello, sure. Thank you for the teaching, David. It was very good. I really just, what came through to me is just your continuing to emphasize, notice what's arising and notice when it passes away. I think that is really sort of the basis of the practice. And if you can notice what's arising without grasping onto it, without, oh, why am I feeling this? What, you know, I must have done all of that. It's just, it's arising and it's passing away. And the more, especially on the cushion, that you allow that and that you're able to see that happen, to actually see it happen without interacting with that phenomenon, then that's when you pass into a different phase of meditation. Mm-hmm. And that's when I feel you're ready for an insight if it's going to arise. But the whole thing I just said, you can't make that happen. You can't force it. You just have to watch your mind, watch things arise and watch things pass away.
And just listening to you, you described you're ready for an insight, but you had an insight.
Right.
You had the insight of impermanence.
That's right.
That's what this practice is about. That we have a mistaken, ignorant view of impermanence. And you described it. So you had your insight.
That's right.
You know, that there's no
other. That's another peel that just came off the onion.
Yeah. Because this practice is about all conditioned things are impermanent. And be aware of it. Dispassionately. So thank you.
Thank you, David.
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning. Thank you for your teaching. Great comments from everybody. So I will take the noble silence today.
Thank you, Mark. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning, David. That was fantastic. One of the impression I'm left with is of mindfulness as agency. You know, it gives you the tools you need. To navigate each of the steps in the list. Well, not steps, right? Though they're mm-hmm. co-occurring in some respects. That mindfulness kind of gives you permission to let go of the things that you are otherwise clinging to. I had it more clear than my mind a few minutes ago, but
it qualifies you.
Yeah,
prepares you. It reconditions your mind to be ready for that moment when it arises. I'm guessing for most people in the world that are uninstructed, it's happening all the time. And it's building that little bit of stress because you're not seeing that arising and passing away within the context of, again, dependent origination. It has to be placed somewhere because there's all kinds of mindfulness out there. We have the great gift that John was able to represent to show that it's allowing you to recondition your mind, the tool.
Yeah.
Because that's what it is. It's a change in the way you think so you can see at this moment what is happening and you can see it arise because you're mindful. People who aren't mindful cannot possibly see it arise and pass away. They just can't. They can't maintain it. There's no structure to these practices that don't have an Eightfold Path.
So that's really the agency that you talked about.
Yeah.
I love that word.
Yeah.
It's a good word.
Yeah, love that too.
Yeah, it's good. Thank you, Adam.
Thanks, David.
Good morning, my friend, over there.
Good morning.
Is that lined up anywhere? Is that right?
Sir? Is this right? You got it right in the center.
Okay. Yeah. Morning. Thank you for teaching. I think, is there another person there that you didn't see?
No, that's Dr. Kevin now.
Dr. Kevin.
No, it's somebody else.
It's us.
That's you. That's you, honey.
No, no. And the top, yes. I thought that.
That's Tracy.
That's Tracy.
No. I see Tracy. I thought it was another person.
No, this just that's.
But thank you for the teaching and the comments. To me, what one of the realizations is that everything is rising and passing away. You know, there is nothing to be clinging to, nothing to dissolve from. Mm-hmm. So that's the right.
There's no point in clinging to something that you have no. You cannot control impermanence. It's arising and passing away. The other insight is that to think that you can be a permanent self, that I have control over these five clinging aggregates, which is suffering, that's when we say it's not personal. This form is not permanent. And what do we do through our whole life until we are done? We cling to it. Cling to the form, feeling, our thoughts, our ideas, We think we're the boss of them. You're not the boss of them. That's when what you're describing.
It doesn't mean that you're not there anymore.
No.
It means that you are there with a right and true view of what is happening.
Mm-hmm.
So you are there with nothing being taken personally. It's not, you are not in control.
And there's no exceptions, Raquel.
So you can let go because yes. you can't control it.
Mm-hmm.
So let it go.
It's changing anyways.
Yeah, it's going to be gone.
That's grasping. That's the grasping that, you know, if you want to like keep this thing the same, that is greed. You're being greedy to keep this thing the same. If you don't like something, you're pushing it away.
But the problem with that is that it's impossible to do what you're trying to do. If you're trying to keep something the same, you're going to fail, and it's going to give you a great deal of stress. So realize you can't keep it the same. Enjoy it in this moment and go on to the next moment. Let it go.
Be sensitive that you're uncomfortable with it.
Yeah.
It's arising and passing away. It's happening anyways. You just are now developing a level of mindfulness that you're starting to see it. And that can be uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, versus just, you know, stuff happens just you know, out in the world. It's going on. And you live with this level of like, oh, that's just the way life is. It doesn't have to be that way. It doesn't give you a pass on the things that are naturally occurring that are painful for us all. But you're not using the second arrow on yourself.
Yeah.
If you can do anything, that's what this practice is about. You're not inflicting a second arrow.
Yeah, thank you.
Cody.
I'm sorry, can I make a comment?
Sure.
I'm glad you brought this up, Raquel. Something just occurred to me that, so we're not in control of anything. It's all impermanent. And what I'm hearing from, I guess as a statement of comfort from many religious people, they'll say, well, something happened, right? They'll say, well, God is in control.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So to me, that means like we all want this innate desire to know that something's in control.
That's true. We all want that, and we can't have it. That's why we got to let it go.
Right. But I guess, and I'm okay. I'm cool with that. But I think a lot of people, they want to feel that
mm-hmm.
something out there is in control. Right. Mm-hmm. And if there's nothing in control, it's just happening. I could just see a lot of people feel like, I'm not able to accept that because that just gives them a feeling of chaos.
Well, that's the Four Noble Truths. Those people who can't, I'm sorry, I'm joking.
I'm putting this as a question out to all of you. I mean, we all have in common this brain that's been preconditioned to behave in a certain way. And a lot of people find comfort in a deity that's in control.
But they all experiencing the stress of that second arrow. They do. There's nothing in that faith-based that addresses it and gives them a structure to understand it and to release yourself of these things that are being trusted to a boogeyman. I want to take control over what I can control. And I'm not saying I have full control over it, because I accept that there's impermanence. I have to. It's a law. It's you can't get around the fact that the three marks of existence need to be understood. And that's the insight. That's the insight that we're trying to develop through our mindfulness. And that's the promise of the Buddha is not to have no suffering. It's to understand suffering and to put aside the stuff that you are bringing on yourself. People of faith are hoping that somebody else does it for them. Mm-hmm. I don't know how well that's going. I don't know how that's doing. How are we doing with that? Is that a decent approach these days or ever?
Not working out so well.
Not so working out so well.
And if it's...
There are exceptions. My wife's mother.
Dutifully
faithful. And it works. But it's like having another form of mindfulness.
If it works.
Yes.
I feel like for the people that it worked for, well, I'm just thinking of my grandmother right now. Because it worked for, my grandmother was a Christian in every sense of the word. And she was a Mormon, but she was a Christian first. And I feel like if you're mindful enough to do that, that you're fine. You're really doing almost what we're doing in a way. I mean,
there's a lot of gigs out there.
It's not,
there's a lot of gigs.
Yeah, there's a lot of gigs. Whatever works for you is fine, yeah. But don't. It's my feeling that you don't try to make what's working for you work for somebody else.
We're a small little bit of the world that has unusually come together as householders. In a way, we're joining twice a week. We're sitting, meditating, where the bulk of the Buddhist world does not meditate. And they are driven for a faith-based Buddha in the sky. He will take care of me if I give my alms to the people that need alms and go to their version of Christmas and Easter. And they will experience suffering imposed on themselves. We're doing a little bit of work to say, I need to address this thing that I have some control over, that I see it, I understand it, and I'm trying to lessen it. And that's really what we're doing here. It's not by faith of anything other than understanding the Buddha's teachings. So thank you, Mark. I mean, it's a good question. It really, there's a lot of ways to skin the proverbial cat. But I would say the Buddha would say it will ultimately fail because there's no understanding. If you're looking for someone else to take care of you, be an island unto yourselves.
We often get the question, can I have this practice and be a committed Christian or Muslim or whatever at the same time? And that's never an easy question to answer. In the short run, yeah, you can have this practice, mm-hmm. and you can work on your concentration and your mindfulness. But then as you get deeper, there's a choice to be made.
Mm-hmm.
You have to give up that, that hope for this external thing to come in and solve your problems. I thought at some point you have to commit and say, yeah. No, this is mine.
Cobbling together the perfect program for yourself will only bring distraction, and ultimately you will suffer distress because you're ignoring some basic thing that the Buddha's established. There is suffering. This is the cause of suffering. Suffering can cease if you follow this Eightfold Path. Jen says it best. We're all adults. Do what you want. Do what you want. I mean, it really is your personal, how you get through your day in this moment and your quality of your mind at this moment.
John always used to say it too.
Mm-hmm.
You're becoming a fully mature human being. And that's what we're working toward.
Yeah.
With emphasis on human being.
And the Buddha would never say you need to stop this former practice and, mm-hmm. you know, to turn away from a previous teacher. But he would say, Episcopal, come and see for yourself and to perfectly develop this mindfulness. And that's what he would say. He wouldn't disparage anyone. He didn't need to. He would say, this is my teachings. Do what you want with them. But if you choose to, doing it a little bit is wonderful. You'll get something out of it. If you do it a little bit more, you'll see the development of your mindfulness through your jhana meditation. If you do it to its ultimate, the Buddha says that at the end, you'll experience full, mature human being. And that's the promise. That's the householders, it's a little tougher. You got a cat stepping on your head while you're meditating. Cody, good morning.
Thank you for the teaching. Love that we use the word agency. I was thinking about just in my sit, having some back pain or some distraction or whatever it might be. And just like, what is it that I have? And when I accept this, and then I'm not a part of it, or doesn't define me, I'm not identified with it. Do I have power now? Is that power? Is that agency? Do I abandon this thing, relinquish it? Agency is a good word. But really it's the identification. It's knowing what I am and what I am not. Maybe humility, combination of agency and gratitude. I got 7 years. I'll invest that much. It's just, I think what I've heard teachers say to me, is that when you come here and you sit or you listen, investigate, you just set aside those beliefs. You have other beliefs, you're entitled to those beliefs. Mm-hmm. That's fine. But, just have an open mind to what you're experiencing here. And then once you experience it, you see for yourself, you'll know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the two things are not mutually exclusive. You can believe whatever you want to believe. Whatever story, whatever myth, whatever credo, so long as you're capable of having an open mind
mm-hmm.
to what you're experiencing, be open to what you're experiencing.
The Buddha provided was
a
structure.
Yeah.
That's what there's bits and pieces of that. And someone will say, that's exactly what the Buddha taught. But there's not an eightfold path.
I'm not here to, I speak for myself. I'm not here to understand the morality of the universe. I'm not here for a code of ethics or a, I just gain a fuller understanding of my experience. And there's some conclusions that mm-hmm. I can draw from that, but that's, I discovered a practice sort of adjacent to this one 20 years ago. And it served me well. And it shaped my thoughts. It conditioned my thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And when I came here, it was an effort to set it aside. I was very attached to it. And I just told myself, I don't have to, just listen, just have an open mind, just sit. And I don't know that, I don't know that the two are mutually exclusive. I don't know that there are things that coincide, there are things that overlap, there are teachings that are similar, there are some that are different. And it wouldn't be appropriate for me to come here, bring that with me, and try to convince you all that that's the right way. Just in the same way that it wouldn't be appropriate for me to say to anyone, or for us as a Sangha to say to any individual here that, well, that Christianity stuff, you got to leave that over there. Do you believe whatever you want to believe? Really, John would have some wisecrack or some joke or some pithy.
John wouldn't say anything different than what we're saying today.
John would always say, though, that this practice is just for those with a speck of dust in their eye. That it's not a practice for everyone.
Well, that speck of dust in their eye is the difference between all other practices.
Yes.
It's the conclusions. It's the Eightfold Path. So things that sound similar are not supported by a complete Eightfold Path. It doesn't have this Sangha that is unique in this world. I think I asked you, I'm like, does this exist anywhere else? Anywhere else? I mean, like, people coming together in Frenchtown, all places,
center of the world,
and we have rigor, and we keep up at it. And sometimes there's two people. I was going to teach to Ram and Adam. It doesn't matter. John taught at the height. He taught Dr. Kevin.
Yep,
and it didn't matter. It just. And he never changed.
Mm-mm.
He never said, "Oh, you know what? I'm going to tweak that, the fifth, factor." We're consistent, and that's the difference. So, when Jerry Seinfeld is cobbling together his thing, it's good, but the resolution and the supporting structure just isn't there. It just is not there, so it can't be sustained. Because he's not developing it as a complete path to practice. Limiting. Who said it today? It's limiting.
Limiting, yeah.
But it includes everything. A handful of leaves. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of good things outside that handful of leaves. But it might cause confusion. It might cause, this is the same thing. No, investigate. That awakening factor of investigation. You'll see it when you're calm and you establish seclusion. That's the difference. My friend Ron.
A lot of questions here. I just wanted to say that all of this whole practice starts with this one tool of concentration. That is the tool. That tool allows you that agency of mindfulness, and it rolls from there.
Mm-hmm.
So the establishment of the meditation practice itself is really crucial to this. That'll get you to that tipping point where you realize, oh, this is not just interesting, this is actually working.
Mm-hmm.
And I spend 50 years looking for this, like 40 years, 10 years ago. But the, yeah, as you said, the rigor of this is quite important. And I was going to say it's easy to lose it, but it isn't actually. Once you put in that initial effort, it becomes self-sustaining quite soon. But it also depends on where you're coming from, you know. If your life is fine and you're just looking for something else that's interesting to do, you know, or you want to belong to something cool.
It's here?
No, it's not
going to be. Yeah.
I'm just guessing.
For some brainy people, this is cool, you know. But
well, that's where the rising of the hindrances.
Mm-hmm.
It's so important. Like, that's why the juxtaposition of the hindrances and the enlightened factors, mm-hmm. as it arises, you're aware of it.
Right.
Why am I restless? Why do I have anxiety? Why do I feel ill? Why do I have doubt myself and this practice? Like you said, it's easy to fall off, but your mindfulness is there to say, I'm aware of it. And to mindfully investigate in an appropriate place when ill will has calmed itself because it's passing, you have an opportunity within this framework of the Eightfold Path to come to terms with some of those things. That's the rigor. It's easy lifting with rigor, but it's there, so it's built so you can figure things out.
Yeah. With what intent am I applying these mm-hmm. tools? And with how much effort do I apply these tools? Those are the questions, you know, and they get answered by the enlightenment factors.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, yeah, it's here. I'm mindful of them.
Thank you, Ram. Thank you, everyone. Anyone else? Anybody? We're good. Dr. Kevin, Tracy, anything else? We never go back. How's it work with you two online in discussion? I never hear anyone jump in.
What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, there's discussions in the room, but typically, like once you're done, you're done. Like, is that, what's the experience? Because you've both been in class and not. Like, yeah. Is there a way to make that flow better?
I can hear better because sometimes I'm listening from home.
You can't hear?
I couldn't hear.
Yeah, it's very hard to hear.
Is that part still an issue? Hearing
pretty bad today.
Yeah, it's okay. I think one of the things I like about not being able to participate in the discussion is that sometimes I don't need to, like, I could benefit from learning how to listen more and not talk so much. So I use it as a way of having some restraint anyway.
Gotcha. I just want to make sure that the experience that if somebody does have something to chirp in on, they'd be chirping.
Yeah, I was on the edge of something today, and there's sort of like an extra step, you know, unmute and
yeah.
Do I interrupt? And, you know, it's just, I don't want to blurt out or something like that. It's something I have too, like a shyness about it.
Yeah. There is a hand raise option here. Like, I don't know if you see that. Maybe we can use that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Something to keep in mind.
Yeah.
We don't want to exclude anyone just because we're online. All right. Well, if we're all set, we'll do the Karaniya Metta Sutta. So find your relaxed meditation posture. This is what is done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. They are able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied. They remain unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways. They are peaceful and calm, wise and skillful, not proud or demanding in nature. They do not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove. They are always mindful that all beings be at ease, whatever living beings they may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born. They are always mindful not to deceive another or despise any being in any state. They abandon anger and ill will with ease, never wishing harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with the boundless heart, the wise disciple cherishes all living beings. They radiate kindness over the entire world, spreading upward to the skies and downward to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. They maintain refined mindfulness. This is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, having completed the path, does not give birth to another moment rooted in ignorance of the Four Noble Truths. Thank you, everyone, for joining us.